Welcome to PharmaDocs with your host, myself, Dr. Jay Resnick, and Dr. John Robertson. Practicing oral surgeons bring you the latest and greatest in pharmacology as it affects you in your daily dental practice.
All right. Good evening, John. How are you?
Hey, Jay. Good evening. Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year. Hope you had an exciting New Year's.
Good holidays. I did. How about you?
Yeah, it was fun. We did a lot of cooking, a lot of cleaning up, a lot of eating. It was a lot of fun, but I'm kind of glad it's over so I can get back to my normal routine.
Listen, I am glad it's back to normality for me, and I'm glad to be back tonight's show again. I've been missing PharmaDocs, man. It has become a void, and so I'm glad we're back tonight, man. It's exciting stuff going on.
Oh yeah, yep. It's what am I doing? Wrong button. Okay. We've got a busy night tonight. We've got six different drugs that we're going to talk about. In addition to talking about monoclonal antibodies and how they get those crazy names.
And we know all about these monoclonal antibodies. They seem to be making it more and more in the news. And I mean, look, I think truth be known, Jay, by the time we tally up for the year 2021, mm-hmm. probably close to about 90 new drugs approved, brother.
Yeah.
90.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. How do you keep up with
it? It's going to be a big year for drugs this year. The monoclonal antibodies medications are coming out all the time. In fact, of the six drugs we're talking about that have come out in the last 2 weeks, three of them are monoclonal antibody drugs.
Yes. But you know, Jay, before we get started today, the FDA warned that buprenorphine may cause dental problems.
Yeah, I saw that.
A very high incidence of oral infections, mm-hmm. decay, tooth loss. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And so, I mean,
we'll have to investigate the mechanism of that too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because look, it's also the trade name is known as like Buprenex.
Yeah.
Or Sublocade. Mm-hmm. Or Probufene. So these are the patients that come in our office are the ones that had some problem with an opioid or narcotic.
Right.
They were abusing these drugs.
Yeah. And so they're trying to get off of them, and now they've got other problems.
That's right. So
we're going to see them in our offices because
Jay, I saw where like 20 million prescriptions were written last year. 20 million.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. It's going to keep us busy.
Yeah, sure is. But why don't we get moving? Because we've got a lot.
Let's
to cover
go, brother.
Tonight.
So, hey, well, let's talk about Adbry. All right?
Okay, so let's start with Adbry or Adbry. This is tralokinumab dash LDRM, and this is a drug that was recently actually was approved on December 27th.
Correct.
For treatment of atopic dermatitis.
That's right. And it's an interleukin 13 antagonist.
Right.
And this is for patients that have a severe atrophic or atopic dermatitis.
Yeah. And this is pretty prevalent. About over 9 million children and over 16 million adults have atopic dermatitis. And what's interesting is, these patients, especially when they're kids, and they develop atopic dermatitis, a good majority of them will go on to develop food allergies,
yes,
allergic rhinitis, and asthma. And this is known as the atopic triad. Remember, we talked about the triad of with asthma a couple of weeks ago with nasal polyps and aspirin sensitivity. So this is different. This is the atopic triad, and usually it goes in sequence where the atopic dermatitis is first, and then the kids develop allergies, and then it goes on to asthma. And that's known as the atopic march.
So, Jay, what do we need to be concerned about as dentists here? Are we looking at another type of medication that we should be considering antibiotics on our patients for any type of invasive procedure?
Well, you'll notice on the name, it is tralokinumab. And so this is a monoclonal antibody drug. And of course, it's immune modulating. And so anyone who's on this drug is going to be at a higher risk of infection. Correct. Now, interleukin 13 is a interleukin that basically modulates inflammation peripherally, as opposed to interleukin 4, which modulates more centrally. So you have this peripheral modulation of or exacerbation of inflammation. So it's thought that atopic dermatitis is due to an overexpression of interleukin 13. And so what this drug does is it reduces, it's an antibody against interleukin 13. And by doing so, it reduces the symptoms of peripheral inflammation that you see in atopic dermatitis, the skin rash, the itchiness, the dry skin. And it, it's a really prevalent problem. And until recently, the only monoclonal antibody drug that was approved for treating atopic dermatitis was dupilumab, which if you've watched any TV, you've probably heard of it, Dupixent.
Dupixent.
That's where I learned about Dupixent. It was on commercial on TV.
Right.
Now, that one blocks both interleukin 4 and 13, but Adbry is the first one that is specific to interleukin 13.
So when our patients come into our office, they aren't going to write down the full generic name. They're going to say Adbry.
Adbry, exactly. Right? And they're not going to write down that they have atopic dermatitis.
Correct.
They might put down if they have asthma, and they may put down food allergies. A lot of times we ask our patients what are you allergic to? And they'll put not only drugs, but also food allergies. So that's a red flag to look out for.
Right.
But,
right.
If they have any skin issues, and we talked about Opzelura cream a couple of weeks ago, that the Janus kinase
in it. That's right.
So that's another drug that could clue you in that this patient has atopic dermatitis if they're on that. But again, this being a monoclonal antibody drug, what we have to worry about is the immune suppression in these patients, and so
that's
why we need to know about it.
So bottom line, again, when you have that ending drug name of NUMAB, as Jay is so...
Or MAB, stated, M-A-B.
Or MAB.
Yeah.
We got to think about a monoclonal antibody. Therefore, we have an immunosuppressant going on. So you have an invasive procedure. Cover these patients.
Yep. They've got to be covered. Okay? Higher risk of infection and other complications. So the next drug...
Yes.
...is Leqvio. In Inclisiran. Yes,
that's right. And it's used for high cholesterol.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, this is a very interesting drug, Jay, because, this is not like one of our statin drugs.
Right.
This is more or less working against RNA.
Exactly.
The small interfering RNA. Exactly. And I mean, it's directed against a certain type of pro-protein,
right,
to help bring down very high cholesterol.
Yeah. And the statins, if you remember, are drugs that that inhibit the HMG-CoA pathway that produces the cholesterol. This has a totally different approach. It involves what's called a small interfering RNA, siRNA, and it's directed against this protein, PCSK9, proprotein convertase subtilisin kexin type 9.
Could you say that three more times, please?
PCSK9. PCSK9.
PCSK9. That's definitely a mouthful, but look what it does. Yeah. It reduces the low-density lipoprotein.
All right. Yeah, it's a PCSK9 is a modulator of LDL receptors, and what it does is it is involved with breaking down these LDL receptors before they essentially embed into the cell membranes. And so by breaking down the LDL receptors, the LDL level in the blood is higher. So most of the LDL receptors you have are in the liver, and the liver then clears the LDL out of the blood. So if you've got something that is inhibiting the LDL receptors, then especially in the liver, then the LDL level is going to go up. So what this protein or what this drug does is it breaks down these LDL what it does, it interferes with the expression of the PCSK9 protein by degrading the mRNA after it's transcribed, which means that it never is translated, which means that this protein is not even made. And so it allows the liver to clear more LDL from the bloodstream than it would without the drug. And it's the first and only drug that works by this mechanism.
Okay, that's right. That's where I was going with this. I mean, think about how neat this new pathway is to treat.
Yeah.
Bad cholesterol.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So if the statins aren't getting the job done, now you go to this injection with two doses a year. Yeah. Okay.
About 16 million people in the U.S. are on statins, and it's not doing the job for them. And the other thing with the statins is they have lots of side effects, muscle aches, joint pain. You can rupture tendons, rhabdomyolysis, yes. All kinds of side effects. And a lot of people who start on statins because of the muscle pain, because of the myalgia, stop taking it. And the beauty of this is that we can, the beauty of it is that with a twice a year dose injection, you don't have to worry about compliance.
That's right.
So it's definitely a great drug to know about. And we're going to be hearing about it. And so
we're going to be hearing about others. There'll be others created as well, Jay. Okay. I mean, because look at what's going on with the new mAb drugs. I mean, there's more and more biologics coming out. And you know, with the cholesterol thing, again, as a practitioner out there, we have to be concerned about our patients that come in with high cholesterol.
Right.
What else is going on? I mean, atherosclerosis.
Exactly.
Right? CAD. Means this puts our patients at prone, Jay.
Yeah.
For higher risk myocardial infarctions.
MI. Exactly. Strokes.
Yes. Yeah. So we, and of course, hypertension. We got to be thinking about all of this when these patients come in. Hey, what is your cholesterol level?
Yeah.
All right. And if it's greater than 200, that's a patient red flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And patients should know their numbers too. A lot of patients do know their numbers. So if they're on the cholesterol drugs, ask them, are they compliant with the medication for one? But also, do they know what their cholesterol level is?
They're going to know their cholesterol level. They're going to know their LDLs.
Yeah.
They're going to know their HDLs. They're going to know their triglycerides, just like with diabetes.
Yeah,
they're going to know their A1C.
Right, because we want to risk stratify our patients so we know which ones are at high risk and which ones are at lower risk. Exactly.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to the next one that was developed for the treatment of myasthenia gravis.
Yeah, and that's Vyvgart.
Yeah.
Yes. Efgartigimod alpha-FCAB.
Vyvgart. It sounds like a Viking name or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe. So, you know, this again is an interesting drug that it works by blocking the neonatal FC receptors in the body. And, you know, myasthenia gravis is caused by autoantibodies. It's an autoimmune disease.
Correct.
Antibodies against the acetylcholine receptors in the neuromuscular junction. And so those impulses from the nerves to move the muscles never gets through the neuromuscular junction.
Right.
And what this neonatal FCRN does is it breaks down IgG. So it breaks down these autoantibodies and it prevents breakdown of these autoantibodies. And so it allows the level to rise. And this is what leads to increasing symptoms in myasthenia gravis patients. And they have all kinds of all kinds of muscle weakness problems. They have trouble swallowing, trouble speaking. They may have trouble ambulating. They may have issues with swallowing and with breathing. So it's a pretty significant disease. And some patients are affected mildly and some much more significantly. And so,
but Jay, by this binding to the FCRN, it results in a reduction of the circulating immunoglobulins,
right.
Specifically the immunoglobulin G antibody,
right?
therefore improving their symptoms. Because like you said, myasthenia gravis is all about significant, severe, debilitating muscle weakness.
Yeah. Okay? So it increases the amount of acetylcholine at the neuromuscular junction.
So let's stress to everybody again, this is an autoimmune disease. This ought to be triggering something on you as well too. Yeah. Like, okay, I've got an immunocompromised patient in my office here.
Yeah. Definitely, most definitely. So Vyvgart is another drug that we need to be aware of, in addition to Tezspire.
So this is
Tezepelumab-EKKO.
Another UMAB drug, but this is used for asthma.
Yep.
And it's an injection. Okay. Right. So that's what's really interesting with our drugs that are coming out later now in this past year, and we'll see more in the beginning. Yeah. We're getting more into these injections. And Jay, my opinion is that it's going to increase or improve compliance.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
Because think about it. If you get an injection twice a year for your asthma, hey, you're going to feel much better when you go to the dentist to have a procedure done.
Yeah. Now, this drug isn't used by itself. It's usually add-on. Maintenance. Remember, we have maintenance drugs and we have rescue drugs like the inhalers. So this is an add-on maintenance drug for patients 12 and over who are not well treated with their regular medications with steroids or other medications.
Well, and it acts at the top of the inflammatory cascade by targeting. Now, this is what's called the TSLP, thymic stromal lymphoprotein. Which is an epithelial cytokine, okay?
Right, and exactly. It attracts T cells. It's released from monocytes, and it induces inflammation in the lungs, also in the skin and GI tract. And so it's basically the TSLP is what starts the inflammatory cascade that leads to an asthmatic attack. And so Tezspire blocks that. It acts at the very top of the inflammatory cascade and basically stops the cytokines from being released.
And you know, Jay, if I have a patient that comes in here on Tezspire, and of course I don't know what that drug is. Tezspire. Okay. And of course, as we've said, hopefully our dental assistants will go in there and mark everything, bring the chart to you and, hey, Dr. Resnick, I don't know what this drug is. And I don't either. Let's look that up. This is somebody has asthma that's just not being treated just albuterol, Ventolin, or maybe even Symbicort,
right? Or even prednisone.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, this should also pop up a light bulb saying, okay, this person's got a significant asthma issue.
This is a bad asthmatic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we got to find out, okay, when was the last time? More than likely, they have used rescue inhalers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just going to say, Jay, I've said it before on our show. I tell everybody that comes in with multiple medications on asthma.
Yeah.
You know, when was the last time you used your rescue inhaler?
Right. And did it work? How many times do you have to spray it?
Yes. I just used it a couple of days ago. All right. What were you doing? I was working in the yard or I got stressed out. Well, yeah, people out at our dinner.
Exactly.
Office,
so you want to know what exacerbates their asthma because you don't want them to have an asthma attack while they're in your office, while we are stressing them.
And so that's why I encourage all of you to have your patients bring their albuterol inhaler with them. And before the treatment is done, take two puffs.
Yeah.
Right there in your reception area. Let somebody see it. Make sure they take a good inhale.
Especially if you're sedating the patient.
That's right. So this is where you are trying to prevent a medical emergency, that being a bronchospasm or an asthmatic attack. Yeah,
exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
And more than likely, you will probably prevent that. Jay, I've done that since day one. I've never had an asthmatic issue in my office.
Yeah, same in mine.
Awesome. we're doing relatively the same thing, opposite ends of the country. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So we're playing prevent defense right here.
Right.
All right. So
it's the best offense.
Absolutely. So a good patient defense. That comes in here on Tezspire, this is a significant asthmatic patient that's now in your office.
Absolutely. Yep. You got it. Let's see. Oh, anyway, so what I was going to mention when we got to this drug is that triad of asthma with nasal polyps and aspirin sensitivity is known as Samter's triad.
That's
and right. As opposed to the atopic triad, which is IgE-mediated, Samter's triad is mediated by blockade of COX-1. So the patients will also be sensitive to nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Right. So Samter is S-A-M-T-E-R apostrophe S. So yeah. Look that up. Look up Samter's triad. Read about it and just be familiar and just keep that in the back of your mind on asthmatic patients as well, too. Great point to bring up there, Jay. Because we have discussed this in the previous shows as well, too. And I like going back, just bringing up stuff like that as well.
Yeah, it's good to refresh your memory.
Oh, absolutely. Because right. Look, again, man. I think you said it best. So if the average amount of new drugs coming out is 50 a year and you've been out of dental school 10 years, that's 500 new drugs. Mm-hmm. That's 500 new drugs that you're going to have patients on pretty much all of them. Mm-hmm. All right.
You have patients coming in on these all the time. In fact, our next drug, I saw a patient yesterday who is on this drug adalimumab.
Yusimry.
But the other version of it, which is Humira.
Yes.
And so this patient, of course, is going to be an immunocompromised patient because they're on this monoclonal antibody drug.
And Jay, this drug is used for a lot. Like RA.
Yeah,
rheumatoid arthritis or juvenile RA,
ankylosing spondylitis, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, plaque psoriasis. Yeah, it's got a lot of uses, and so this is what we call a biosimilar drug. So it's very similar, if not identical, to Humira, which is also adalimumab. So that's we're going to start seeing more of these biosimilar drugs as time goes on, as more companies develop their own drugs for sale in different markets. In fact, Humira, just to give you some perspective, this is the, as of 2020, was the number one selling drug in the world. Number one selling prescription drug in the world. It generated $16.1 billion in the U.S. and $198 billion globally.
Look at the multiple applications for this drug. Mm-hmm. All right. It's just not RA, but also what's going on GI-wise well, too, with Crohn's and UC as well.
Yeah.
And also on your skin with plaque psoriasis as well, too.
Yeah. It's basically used for just about every autoimmune inflammatory disease.
So, okay, and the other thing is we got to think about when that patient comes in on one of these drugs, what are some other medications they're taking? I'm guaranteed they're going to be on some form of a steroid.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got two different agents we got to be careful about if we go in there and, quote, stress out this patient, because they're probably going to be on a steroid for an extended period of time. So we got to make sure we have good steroid coverage
Before
we do any type of stressful procedure on these patients as well, too.
Yeah, we got to make, for most of them, it's just doubling their dose on the day of the procedure.
Correct. That's right. Mm-hmm. And then make sure we cover these also with antibiotics as well, too.
Yeah, these patients are higher risk of infection.
So,
and higher risk of wound breakdown, too.
Absolutely. The thing about it, Jay, again, all of these drugs that are coming out, these injectables. All right. I mean, it's a game changer for many of these patients. Mm-hmm. All right. Many of these patients may not have been able to come to our office. Now they're able to because of medications like this.
Yeah. They have much better control.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our last drug. Dartisla, ODT. And this is glycopyrrolate, which is a drug we're both very familiar with because we use this drug in our patients who were doing IV sedation as a drying agent. So their mouth is not as wet when we're working. Right. And but the difference is this is being used instead of an injectable version as an oral disintegrating tablet used to treat peptic ulcer disease.
Right. So anytime you see the name ODT, that's orally disintegrating tablet, like for example, Zofran. Okay. So you're right for your patient, Zofran ODT. Very similar, like that's what's going on with Dartizla right there, because this is helping to reduce the symptoms associated with a peptic ulcer.
Mm-hmm. It's an anticholinergic drug, which affects, of course, you know, is involved with the parasympathetic nervous system, which we've talked about before. The rest and digest function is mediated through the parasympathetic nervous system via the vagus nerve, right? Remember that from anatomy?
Absolutely.
That goes to innervate the stomach to generate the pepsin and the gastric acids. And so, peptic ulcer disease has been going on for a long time, and it's been treated for a long time. And for a long time, the mainstay medications were drugs like cimetidine and famotidine, which were H2 receptor antagonists. So they affected the histamine protein receptor in the parietal cells of the stomach. And then they discovered this proton pump which is basically
omeprazole and all them.
Yeah. So basically the proton pump is an ATPase that is responsible for kicking out the protons, the hydrogen protons that combine with the chlorine molecules. To give us an HCl or gastric acid. So by inhibiting the proton pump, that is a much more effective way of reducing the amount of gastric acid and pepsin. It's used for long-term maintenance as opposed to just as needed.
Yes.
Which is kind of what the H2 receptor antagonists are used for now, is just if you're having an acute episode, and the omeprazole is more for maintenance. So, yeah, we talked about why we use this drug in surgery to dry the patient's mouth, to dry their oral cavity. So what's going to be one of the side effects, and one of the main side effects of this drug that's going to affect us is?
Xerostomia.
Exactly. So the patients with xerostomia are at higher risk of dental caries, periodontal disease. And so we've got to be aware of this when they're taking this drug, that it's not just, the drug that affects is used for treating their peptic ulcer disease also will affect the patient dentally and orally.
Right. So they also may need to add a fluoride rinse in the evening as well, too, because they are going to have a reduction in saliva. Therefore, we have a reduction in the enzymes helping us to fight decay.
Right.
Okay.
And so,
when you have patients on this medication, you need to make them aware of that, and that, hey, we may need to see you more than just twice a year.
Yeah.
We may need to do some, more than twice a year fluoride trays. Just keep up and watch for any cariogenic activity.
Right. And, patients may come in and complain of a dry mouth and have no idea that it's due to the anticholinergic drug they're taking, which can also cause other anticholinergic symptoms like blurred vision because it dilates the pupils, decreased sweating. It can cause blushing and tachycardia because remember parasympathetic nervous system slows down the heart, but when you block the parasympathetic input, the heart rate goes up.
It goes up.
So these patients may have tachycardia, they may have nausea, drowsiness, all kinds of things. So this is a drug, again, that we need to know about. All right, so we've covered all six drugs. So let's talk about monoclonal antibodies. So monoclonal antibodies, as you would suspect from the name, are derived from a single cell or single cell line. They are identical, unlike a polyclonal antibody that's developed naturally in an animal or a human being. These drugs are targeted to a specific entity. They're not just you know, for a wide variety of drugs, but they're usually pretty specific in what they're used to treat. And these monoclonal antibodies are basically used by fusing the antibody that's generated either from an animal or free human with a myeloma cell. And the myeloma cell is what makes the monoclonal antibody reproduce. And these monoclonal antibodies come from a number of different sources. If they come from a mouse, purely from a mouse, that's known as a murine antibody, M-U-R-I-N-E. And pure murine antibodies or monoclonal antibodies are not used all that much, because what they found was that people start reacting to the proteins in that monoclonal antibody because it's not human. And so then they started looking at other ways to make the monoclonal antibodies more human, and one of which is combining some mouse parts with human parts. And so a chimeric antibody is about 70% human. The variable region, which is what binds the antigen, that comes from mice. That's murine, and the other 30% is human. You also have a humanized, which is 85 to 90% human. So only the hypervariable region of that monoclonal antibody is of murine origin. It's the 85 to 90% human. And then there's 100% human. So that's where these come from. So what's the deal?
And we're just getting started with this, this whole new era of medications.
So what's the deal with all these complicated names? Are they just making up names just to mess with us? No, it's, as it turns out, the World Health Organization, WHO, formed the International Non-Proprietary Names Working Group in the early 2000s to come up with naming protocols for these drugs. So there's actually a system. So any drug that is a monoclonal antibody ends in MAB, monoclonal antibody. And then you have a prefix, a substem A, and a substem B. And let's work backwards from the MAB. So the substem B is usually one or two letters, and that signifies the origin of the monoclonal antibody. So if it's purely human, that is the UMAB. If it's purely murine, then that would be called an OMAB drug. If it's chimeric, it's a Zymab drug. If it's humanized, so 90% human, it's a Zumab, Z-U-M-A-B. So the majority, all the drugs we talk about today are UMAB, so they're derived from a human source and then multiplied. And there's even...
I was going to say, as far as the trade name goes, it all has to be approved by the FDA.
Yeah. So they can also come from rats, which would be an AMAB. Hamster would be an EMAB. Primate, an IMAB. And if it's for veterinary use, it's a VetMAB. So that's substem B. Substem A is one or two letters that tells you the target of the drug.
Okay.
So if it's, for example, LI or L or LI, that means it's immunomodulating. Okay, so we looked at Tezspire, tezepelumab, right? Yes. So that the L before the UMAB, L or LI, tells us that this is an immune modulating drug. Now, what about the prefix? Well, that's the name that the drug company gets to pick. And the only rules for that is it has to flow with the rest of the name.
Right. But they still have to submit that to be approved by the FDA. And that is a naming process in of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So they come up with these names. So for example, Adbry, the drug for atopic dermatitis, is tralokinumab. So the KI means that it's an interleukin, a drug that acts on interleukins.
That's great stuff there.
Yeah. So these names are just not just made up. There actually is a system. And once you know that and you realize it, not only does it make you understand more about the drug, but it helps you pronounce it.
Yeah.
All right.
Man, well, look, hey, this is great stuff. And look, we'll be back on the
27th, same time, same channel.
There'll be more drugs and there'll be more news to share and all that. And, you know, with so much stuff going on with COVID, Jay, I mean, it's interesting that now they're starting to come out with PO medications that act against COVID just like Tamiflu does against the flu.
Yeah, exactly.
And the problem is we just don't have anything available right now.
But we will. I mean, a year from now, we're going to have, you'll be surprised how much we're going to have.
Oh, yeah. Because, okay. I mean, we you and I both know COVID's here to stay.
Oh, it's
it's going to become
endemic.
It's
like the flu. We'll never get rid of it.
That's right.
Hopefully we can just control it. Keep people from getting too sick. Well, I guess that does it for us tonight, John. So,
yeah, Jay, it does. Thank you for what you do, Jay. Just great stuff
too,
as always. I hope our audience appreciates this. You know, again, just two guys trying to make you a better practitioner.
Yep. All right. So let's say goodnight.
Good night.